such a privilege to meet people like yourselves who, you know, are really also passionate for women in the space. I want to just quickly say it's been such a bro club like the last 15 years and even more so now. So it's so refreshing to see women, young women like yourself coming into the space. And, you know, the cost of not doing so is greater than the cost of doing so. And so, let's just talk about how exciting it is for women, you know, right now.
Welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast, where we talk all things business, Web3 and NFTs. We're on a mission to educate, elevate and empower women into the world of Web3. So join us on this journey as we learn together from leading experts. And remember, this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. So please do your own research and enjoy today's episode. Welcome to another episode of the Sisterhood Club podcast with myself, Georgie Hubbard.
And me, Pam Caldwell.
So today we are super excited about our guest, and Pam has written a little bio about our guest today. So over to you, Pam. You can kick it off.
I have. Today we are privileged to have Liza Boston with us. Liza is an early stage women-led VC angel investor with a passion for Web3, NFTs, crypto and gaming projects. She is a serial digital disruptor and is always at the forefront of technology. She has many achievements to talk to, and coupled with a larger-than-life personality, I am excited to get into this one. So, Liza, over to you. I think it's a really nice spot to just kick off hearing a bit about you and get into your journey.
Well, it's great to be here in the Sisterhood Club. Yeah, so for me, you know, like I feel like a bit of an auntie or a godmother of the space, given I really started my career around the Web 2 time, which is probably showing my age a little. But just thinking back to that time and the excitement and just the, you know, the awe of the kind of read-write web. And I landed in San Francisco, California, as a very kind of bright-eyed young entrepreneur. And, you know, I think the last kind of 15 years has been a slog. You know, we've seen what's happened when the tech falls in the wrong hands. And so this time around with Web 3.0, I've got all the same feels again. It's just so exciting. I feel like I've been sucked into the metaverse. And, I think having that the history, we're seeing a lot of kind of patterns repeating. You know, thinking about bear markets and, you know, I think back to 1998 when I was in the UK and, you know, it was the first kind of dot-com crash. Mm-hmm. And everyone just went, oh, I told you so, this is never going to work, this internet thing. And now, you know, like we're seeing a lot of those kind of growing pains with early crypto bear markets and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I'm just so excited, like I am a 15-year-old again. And I just, it's just such a privilege to meet people like yourselves who, you know, are really also passionate for women in the space. I want to just quickly say it's been such a bro club like the last 15 years and even more so now. So it's so refreshing to see women, young women like yourself coming into the space. And, you know, the cost of not doing so is greater than the cost of doing so. And so, let's just talk about how exciting it is for women, you know, right now and how important it is to have conversations like this.
1,000,000%. And that leads me on to just my first question. So you mentioned it was a boys club and you were very like, you know, somebody when we first met, you talked about your journey about, you know, going to Silicon Valley, you know, being in the same room as Mark Zuckerberg and all the big boy players, right? So what was it like as a female in that sort of male-dominated world? Like, you know, how did you get your voice out there? How did you get ahead? How did you stand out, you know, in a very male-dominated world?
Well, it's a really good question. You know, like, I think when I was, you know, 26, 27, 28, I grew up under the reign of an older brother who was 15 months older, and I had that just really intense competitive spirit, and I don't think I'd ever really felt you know, like discriminated because of my gender at that age, which I was bold and I just thought I belong here. Mm-hmm. I deserve to be here. You know, it never crossed my mind the gender thing. But when I got there, there was four women, there was 1,000 men, And this was the so Tim O'Reilly ran the who invented the term 2.0 ran the conference, and you know there was Marissa Meyer, who was a very early employee from Google. There was Mary Meeker, you know, there's a couple of big names, but that was kind of it, you know. And I looked around the room and I thought, well, geez, you know, these guys, they don't look that smart. I mean, I did it, you know, it was fabulous. I got to meet, the first guy I got to meet with this guy called Mike Moritz, and I'm like, g'day, mate, Krakatini. I said, what's your name? He's like, it's like, I'm Mike Moritz. I'm like, yeah, I'm Liza Boston. And he was the guy who seed funded Google. He said, well, one of the biggest VCs in the valley. Yeah. And I see fun with Google. I said, why'd you do that, mate? He said, well, I met these two young, you know, mathematics PhD from Stanford. He said they were ugly, they didn't have girlfriends, and they were top-notch coders. So I drove up in my red Porsche, and I was in their sister's garage, and I wrote them a $100,000 check. Wow. And he goes, oh, there they are. Come and meet them. I was like, whoa, what? I mean, geez, I just launched my first website. I'm like, oh my god, the Google guy's gonna Google my website. This is yeah. Yeah. So I'm like, Larry, how you going? And then they Googled my business, you know, used the Google Maps, or it was just kind of, and I was standing there thinking, gosh, they're just two dogs. Well, they're no different to any other dorks I know, and I'm a bit of a dork myself, so hey, we're all this together, this is great. And then Mark Zuckerberg turned up in his thongs, mm-hmm. and he'd sold a 2% share of his business to Microsoft for, I think it was $250 million, which is wow. nothing, right? And then he's up on stage and they're all yelling out, when's an adult going to run your company? And I thought, hey, this is great, man. We can take on the status quo, you know, like yeah. this is the power of the people.
Yeah.
And that night I got sat next to Rupert Murdoch because News Corp had just bought MySpace.
Yeah.
And for $580 million, and they tanked it because they put all these News Corp execs. So, you know, like when you get into the inner machinations of Silicon Valley, of what venture capitalism is, of seeing these guys operating, and it's they all live on the same street, it's a network. Mm-hmm. And so for me to crack into that at such an early impressionable age was it really set the tone for my entire career. Like I knew I could pick up the phone and call Mike, oh mate, you know, who wasn't even that flash on the dance floor.
Yeah, and you're going to stand out, right? And one of the things, like, I feel like it's actually quite groundbreaking that as a young woman you were so interested in going down a path of technology and digital. Where did that stem from? Because there's so many challenges that the world faces like across the globe in terms of trying to encourage young girls into technology related subjects and those whole STEM related subjects. It really starts at grassroots level. Can you sort of like reflect on where did the interest come from? How did you originally get so interested in everything that technology could offer?
It's really interesting, and it's about your experience and your environment and your world. And like I said, you know, having that kind of older brother that I was always trying to ride my BMX faster, trying to, you know, I had to bowl all summer because I could never get him out at cricket.
Yeah.
and then as it turned out, he had a mate up the road who was a hottie who was into programming. So I thought, oh, I'll get a computer. I'll get a Commodore 64. And I was selling it at Kmart. It came out for $10,000. And so this is in like 1983 or something. And I was like, oh, you know, Dad, I really want one of these Commodore 64s. I remember nagging him till he got me one. And then we obviously had to do coding. We had to build all our own games. We had to learn how to code just to play on the computer. And then I just kind of took that through high school, and when I got to university, it was my year, because I'm exactly the same age as Sergey and Larry. My year was the first year the internet became like the education standard. So really just being at the cusp of that and arriving and seeing the teachers didn't understand it, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. What? I just took it for granted that I knew how to code and that everyone else did, and that was just a normal thing. It was part of my – and then obviously starting – building early websites and when I got my first job as a graduate, I was consulting to the board because it was an airline and they didn't understand how to build e-commerce systems. And, you know, I remember they'd say to me, oh, like, how long would it take you to do this? And I'm like, oh, I'll test them, you know. Oh, it'll take me 3 weeks. It'll probably take me 3 days. And they'll say, oh, that's great. Yes, you know, phone parties. Yeah. Like I saw it as a way. It was a way to be able to do whatever you want to do,
yeah,
and to challenge the system. Mm-hmm. And I'm a bit of a rebel and anarchist. Mm-hmm. You know what? You know, I remember, you know, why would people want to work 9 to 5? Mm-hmm. That just didn't make any sense to me really early on.
Yeah,
and you know, it's trending on TikTok right now. Like all these capitalism memes. You know,
yeah,
why are people just seen as these productive assets for shareholders? You know, mm-hmm. So questioning that, I've always been kind of into how to recreate the system.
Mm-hmm.
And the most powerful way to do that is to understand tech. It's just a no-brainer. And I teach my boys that now, you know.
So I imagine your favourite film is The Matrix, as is mine. But I'm with you 100%. Like, I've always pushed back. I'm like, I didn't like school. I was like, I don't like being told what to do. I didn't like the structure. I've always argued a 9-to-5 job is just... like, who wants to work 9 to 5? Like, some people work better in the morning, some people work better in the evenings. I just think we've been so programmed, right? But talking about that program, going back to young girls, like, and how you were just really interested in technology because that was your environment, right? What I think is so important, especially as we move into Web3, is to get women and young girls into technology, into tech, into Web3. And I think it's going to be something that we all have to play a part in. So can you sort of maybe share some ideas about how we can do that?
So it's interesting because even like at my stage in my career, you know, which I kind of feel like I've got stripes on my sleeve now from all the highs and lows and trauma and greatness and whatever. Mm. But, I see the need for all of my friends to come into the and to understand the Web3 space. So recently, kind of late December, I thought, right, I'll pick my top 50 mates, friends and colleagues, and I'll drag them in. That's one way to do it. So I kind of knocked on their doors and said, right, I've got a group, you're coming in, and that's it. And
like, you're my favourite 50.
And
feel privileged.
You made the top 50. And then there was more, you know, they kept coming. And because all of a sudden it's like, well, what's going on? Like, ooh, there's something, you know, interesting there. But I can assure you, no, not one single one of those women knew anything. And then after kind of... So you know, really trying. My job to do was to really bring it into their worlds, to humanize it. And I realized women learn about technology differently, and you know, women from these women are from all amazing backgrounds, like banking and finance, and you know, social impact, and artists and whoever they were. And they're very skeptical, very standoffish, but. You know, like I was just chipping away, just kind of saying, well, hey, you know, look what's happening. I think, you know, a good example was like when the war in Ukraine broke out and there's these charity DAOs that started to set up. And I'm like, so this is instant action. Like this is how we get money, you know, across the system. And then we kind of looked at why was crypto massive in like emerging countries like Argentina and Mexico and, you know, like these and or, you know, in certain sectors like in the hip hop community. And like these are all people who are trying to fight against the status quo, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, my women and my challenge to them was, look, you are, you know, probably mostly all white privileged women. If nothing else, imagine if we could have a social impact in the world. And then that's that little lot of fires and every single woman's like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Well, how do we apply it to world aid? How do we human rights? Human rights came into it, you know, and trying to find ways, like really meaningful reasons to use, you know, and looking at, you know, intergenerational wealth. Looking at and as I, you know, work through my career as a technologist, as an entrepreneur, and then a venture capitalist myself, I began to see also that women there was a dearth of women who were deploying capital. Now I care about the future for my children, and every other woman in the room care about the future of their children, families, and you know. Why would you not want to be at that gateway of where the capital's flowing?
Yeah.
And so that means you need to understand alternative asset classes. You know, like often the risk profile of women, stereotypically, I'm not one of them, but stereotypically, is that risk averse, you know. This is another thing I want to talk about because I really hate these classifications because I don't think they're right all the time. And in many ways, it's identity building and you head towards what you think about. So if you come from the premise, you know, I'm just going to jump off that rock. He did. Why can't I, you know? So I really want to cultivate women to understand how to deploy capital both in fiat and crypto, because it's really important, because it changes the game, because that's where we're seeing these eye-watering multiples in tech exits. And why should it be that just white men get to participate 100%. In that? There's 2% of women get funded from VCs, and it is all about unconscious bias. It's just extraordinary. I've sat at board level in investment committee meetings, and I just see how deal flow works. Like, I have a 1,000 women, like, just organically, naturally coming to me because I'm at parties, at dinner parties. You know, I'm attracting deal flow, but it's not happening with the men because they're not having those conversations. They're at the back in the barbecue flipping burgers, or you know, and it's just, and then they'll literally sit there and say, I've got no bias.
Yeah.
But you can't even see that you have the unconscious bias. So how do we unpack that?
I am. This is one thing that I'm actually really excited to speak to you about today. So if we can just like sort of kick off, how did you make the transition from entrepreneur to VC? What did that look like, and what sort of really appealed to you about getting into that space?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I did that. I made the transition from entrepreneur, because I suppose as an entrepreneur, like, you're always doing rounds, you're always raising capital, you're always, you know, and it always, grass is always greener. The VCs have all the fun. I'm going to be one of those. So, you know, let's go. And then you get in there and you realise, well, I'm a creator, I'm a creative, I'm a filmmaker as well, and I write music and I paint, and I've always been on the tools, like, and have ideas. And I think VCs generally, they're the ones that don't have the ideas, because if they did, they'd be doing it. And they're funding, they're kind of throwing cash at other. They're like standing on the cliff just chucking down cash. But I'm like, hang on, no, that's not how you do it. You know, so I've recently kind of thought, you know, I want to come back closer to that entrepreneurial vibe. And I think there's a real gap. It's like teaching someone how to surf. Like, the VC stands on the cliff's throat, come on, surf. Come on, why are you surfing? Oh, that swells up. Well, you know, and then there's the venture studio model, which I'm really exploring in the metaverse at the moment, where I come on the beach with my own surfboard and come out with you and say, hey, this is how you do it. Hold your hand, you duck under the waves. It's going to be okay. This wave's going to smash you. Oh, you're going to be, you're going to wipe out. It's going to be okay. Take a few breaths, you know, and then push. It's exactly how I teach my boys how to surf. You've actually got to push them on the wave, and then they're fine. And then it takes away. And I think for women, like, that's a much better model, because it's really inclusive and iterative and agile and interactive. And, you know, like, there's a lot of those conversations, you know, heaps of little fireside chats. It demystifies it, and it makes it even more fun.
100%.
Yeah.
And I'd love to know, okay, so if I'm a woman listening to this right now and I'm like, right, Liza, help me. I've got this idea. I want to do this. I want to start this side hustle. I want to start this business. Where do I begin?
Well, first of all, I'll say there's no better time, because when I started my first business, I had to have my own server in the office, my own, like, landlines. I think that when I got my first investment, they weren't even plugged in. My little sister's on the front desk. Look, there's no bit of time, you know, like, but okay, so let's be serious about it. Like, I think you have to really, really immerse yourself in the space, and you have to be passionate about a space. You have to have some deep domain expertise, and you have to be really aware that you have to partner with someone who has deep technological expertise, and every company is not right for venture capital either. You know, like, that when you start thinking about getting into venture, you want to start thinking about, you know, companies that are high tech and high growth that can scale, you know, and investors at that level want at least 10x on what they give you, if not more. They're getting 30s and 40s right now. You know, like, you're going to go, like, starting a technology business is very all encompassing. You have to be all in yourself, so you need a good cash runway. Otherwise, you know, your mental health is going to suffer, your physical health. I'm really conscious about nurturing, you know, great techniques to not lead to burnout. I'm really thinking about the future as well. You know, in a capitalist consumptive state, is that kind of growth important always? Is it not? So you have to... you have to kind of, you know, you need cash, you need time, and you need really good networks. Mm-hmm. And you want to really lean into your networks, mm-hmm. And that's how you get ahead.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of mistakes do you see people make, you know, when they're coming to pitch to VCs or just generally starting a business? Like, what are the common mistakes that you're seeing time and time again?
Yeah, well, there's been lots of people in COVID and kind of coming up with ideas you know, I think you can kind of self-fund. You can get to a point where you can, you know, invest 100 grand, 500, a million, mm-hmm. 2 million, and get to a point and then realise you can't get any further. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be really aware of what your capabilities are. Mm-hmm. And I know I personally have made that mistake many times. Like, oh, I'm CEO, chairman, I'll be everything. Yeah. But yeah. Know when to step back, know when to get the experts in. Mm-hmm. And understand that, you know, like when you're building tech, it's agile, it's mm-hmm. ongoing, it mm-hmm. doesn't ever end. Mm-hmm. It's, you don't just like launch an app, walk away and go to the beach, you know, like it's a mm-hmm. it's a fully blown large enterprise to run, you know, a sophisticated technology business. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not easy. So you've got to do a lot of research and mm-hmm. and really speak to quality people that mm-hmm. have experience. Mm-hmm. And that have runs on the board, mm-hmm. and I'm a big fan of the cold call, mm-hmm. and I've done that my whole career because I've, mm-hmm. you know, I identify who's the best and I just call them, mm-hmm. and you know, and when you're setting up a time, you got to be really, really careful to make it worthwhile for the person that you're speaking to as well. Yeah. So you respect their diaries, you know, do it in their time, mm-hmm. come to them with an idea that you think they can add value to, mm-hmm. more than cash. That's mm-hmm. the other thing. Like, money is fungible. Like, mm-hmm. it's everywhere right now. But it's about what can these investors bring that are more than money. So, you know, domain experience, deep networks, revenue. And it has to be an exchange, you know. So mm-hmm. it's a two-way thing. And mm-hmm. you can get a really long way doing that if you do it right.
Yeah, mm. absolutely. So I'd love to dive in now because we've got a lot of women listening to this who are new to crypto, new to Web3, new to NFTs. If you were explaining it to somebody with like no idea about any of this, like where would you begin? How would you sort of like just make it super simple for people to understand like what is an NFT, what is Web3 and why does it matter?
Yeah, well, this is a great question because I get this every Friday, yeah. Saturday night. At the basketball, yeah. It doesn't matter if they're 17 or 77.
Yeah,
I've distilled it right down to like I see Web2 as a, you know, as tech services, and Web3 is a tech product. If you think about all the Web2 companies like your Spotify's, your Netflix, your Epic Games, Fortnite's, you know, where you're participating and transacting in technical environments, but you don't ever own any of the assets, right. in the game or mm-hmm. the music or whatever it is that you're doing. You're paying that to another company, and that's just a service. Mm-hmm. In the Web3 environments, it's a literal renaissance for artists. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, that's the most exciting thing, like being an artist and a technologist and a community builder. Like, they're my three things that I love, and they're coming together in this beautiful way. And so it's about creating digital assets that you can own and, you know, on sell, or you can stake, or you can save, but they're yours. Mm. And so I think that's the at its highest level. Like, if you can think about it like that, mm. it's, you know, like if I play a Web2 game with the boys, mm. like say NBA 2K, something like that, in the game, like, kids and gamers are really used to, you know, in-game transactions. I think in terms of digital media, gaming is just 50 times more revenue than any other sport, like music or, you know, whatever else is going on. So, you know, you're in the game, you're playing, you're in Fortnite, you buy a skin. Mm. You can play to earn or you can purchase. And, you know, you kind of, kids are doing that already. But in the Web3 environment, like when you buy the skin, you own it. And depending on the kind of smart contract it's written on, you can take that in between worlds, in between games. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really – Web3 is more about identity building. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that everything I was actually on my stand-up paddleboard pedalling down the Anglesey River, and it was a beautiful morning and the birds were out and it was a gorgeous sunrise. And I noticed that the river was like a mirror, it was flat. And so the sky was reflecting beautifully on the river as I was paddling along. I thought, that's the metaverse. Because when I look at the sky, like all these parts of my brain light up. I'm like, oh, that's beautiful. It's so. And then I look in the river. I'm like, oh, I have the same feelings.
Mm.
And so it's creating a world it's where people come to and people flock. Like, there will be no metaverse if people aren't attracted to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to hang out there and create communities and interact in certain ways. And mm-hmm. see, kids who are, you know, like 10, 11, 12 now, they it's just scrolling's just not enough. Like, it needs to be 3D. It needs mm-hmm. to be immersive.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to be – and it's already starting to become like that, you know. Mm-hmm. If you look at Snap Maps or you look at the way kids find their friends now.
Mm-hmm.
I know this because I did hack – I had to hack one on the weekend to find some kids. But it's just such a different experience. Imagine being able to see all your friends where they all are on a Friday night, you know, around town.
Yeah.
And they're all of a sudden, so they're avatars now and they're morphing into avatars, and then mm-hmm. and then we come home and we get into our game, and then all of a sudden it's social,
mm-hmm.
and then we're having these whole worlds and discussions in the game, and then we're already traversing through these worlds. Like, I might have the one conversation in 7 or 8 different lands already. It might be Instagram, Twitter, and then Fortnite, and then, you know, some other epic game, and then, you know, so it's a natural progression.
Mm-hmm.
And now working in the metaverse now, it's kind of I can see it, you know, and mm-hmm. I can see, because I think I understand the technology, the back end, and I understand where the eyeballs are going, and that's where the money flows. And mm-hmm. so if you have a business and you're mm-hmm. not thinking about this now,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be future-proofing your brand. Mm-hmm. And every I see thousands of decks. I see all I have an appetite to peruse globally what's going on. I see a lot of heat coming out of the US, Central and South America, UK, Europe, you know. And so having that kind of global view of what's going on, it is happening.
Mm.
And really smart companies like you know, the big you just got to watch where the money flows.
Mm.
I think that's with everything. That's even with this election, you know, watching Sportsbet, who's
yeah.
what's the money, you know. And so there's billions of dollars being poured into the infrastructure right now. Like, when we made our first internet calls, or we were communicating in the early days on the internet, if we had different servers, we couldn't speak to each other. If you're AOL or, you know, whatever it was. But and then they worked out, oh, how can they all speak together, you know. And then so all this infrastructure, layer 1, 2, 3, all this middleware stuff's emerging now. Mm. And the environment is opening up and the money is flowing. So it's the thing is that all the information is so freely available on Twitter. It's extraordinary, the amount of information that you can get for free.
Yeah.
I'd say if you're interested, that's the best place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Really start to tune into who are the loudest voices.
Mm-hmm.
They have these things called Twitter Hangs where people just – you can tune in and listen to all the top artists, all the top technologists. They're having like board meetings in an open Twitter forum. It's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've come from a really closed background and a corporate background right now to let's just tell everyone our secrets and see how that works and how
it's all collaborative, right?
How can we co-create? Mm-hmm. And it's such a great way, because if you give me a whole lot of stuff, I'm going to then think you're awesome and want to buy your stuff later down the track. And I love that.
And I think, you know, you've made a couple of really, really good points there, but it's coming. It's happening. And I think a really important message for a lot of people out there, but obviously our main purpose is to encourage more women into the world of Web3. Just get on board, be a part of it. 3 months ago, I did not know what an NFT was. And I think that's actually the beauty of the space. Get involved, learn as you go, because no one is an expert. Everyone's learning. It is ever evolving, and it's okay to not know and ask the basic questions. Mm. I think you're right. The younger generations are going to have no issue with it at all. They've grown up with it. My daughter the other day laughed when I told her we didn't have iPads at school. And she was like, well, how did you learn, Mummy? And it's just, it's going to be so interesting to see how it continues to grow and evolve. In terms of like our sort of generation, like your friendship groups, what do you feel have been the main objections to your 50 favourites wanting to enter the space? Because Georgie and I are actually really passionate about making sure that we get educational content out there, but the right stuff, right? Mm. What do people in our age groups want to know in order to get them on board, get them into the space as quickly as possible?
Well, I've had everything from the first one. I think it was someone said, are you making this up? Yeah, it's one of your madness of bad ideas. Yeah. Look, there's been a lot from a woman's perspective. There's been a lot of pushback about the environmental impact, and we've done heaps of deep dives as a group, looking at that, looking at, you know, proof of work, proof of stake. A lot of this stuff's being solved out as we go, and they're really real concerns and really important concerns. Mm-hmm. You know, I think all the kind of misinformation that gets put out there about gaming in general, like, you know, a lot of mothers and women are concerned about, you hear things about like rapes in Decentraland, and my thing always was, look, these things are going to happen, and it's going to be worse if women aren't in there having a say and developing and making sure things are safe. And the, you know, we urgently have to do this, and then I really push it right down to, you know, a lot of people, there's a lot of kind of intergenerational wealth transfer happening at the moment. Mm-hmm. And so really in my generation, so it's a really important time to get gatekeepers that who are deploying capital are really doing it in a very intelligent way.
Yeah.
And so to really start to think about, okay, you know, how do these investment structures work? Mm-hmm. What do these investment assets look like? You know, and I've spent a lot of time over the last 6 months really understanding the regulatory frameworks, you know, how high net worth individuals and sophisticated investors can deploy capital in a way that's really going to solve out, you know, our future concerns, you know, around social impact, environment.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying these things are exclusively female concerns. However, we have seen a government that has been very male dominated, almost destroy those kind of pathways. So there's a big impetus on like on private enterprise to solve out some of these big problems. And I think that if we can understand how to deploy capital and then how to do it in a way that's really effective to use the technology to solve these problems. And that's, I forgot to mention, that's one of the main reasons I really love Web3 as well, is the social impact, the way that smart contracts can be written to really support the creators.
Mm-hmm.
Like in this country, it's just disgusting what's happened to the arts from they tried to destroy the Australia Council, and you know, really, I don't want to be political, but the government of the day has actively sought to destroy independent artists, from musicians to painters to creators to galleries. And, you know, and one of my lifelong loves has been, you know, stealing from the rich, giving to the poor, which normally are the artists. And imagine, like, the world that we could create, because the world is created in an image. That means that we can unmake it and then remake it. And that's a massive, like, this is the biggest opportunity we've had since, you know, the Renaissance to do something like that.
Yeah. And everything you're saying is just like, it's so exciting. And I think really, like,
so passionate about like female financial independence is one of those things that just got me fired up about the space.
And this is why, like, so with the sisterhood, we're building out a school. Right, because education is so important for Pam and I. This is why we're in the position we're in, because we've constantly learned and we've had a very open mind to new things. And I really want to encourage women to keep learning, to keep growing, to keep educating themselves, not just in Web3 space, but all areas of their life, you know, finances, you know, health, you know, just how to raise more conscious children. We've got like a motherhood course in there as well. But just to really help women in particular, because now more than ever, we need women in this space, because like you said, it's like, you know, women are being like, oh, I don't agree with that because of this, this, and this. Well, if you don't agree with that and if you turn your back on it, it's going to get worse. So you have to get involved in this. It's actually crucial, because I can really, what my fear is this divide is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And the wealth is going to go, like you say, to all of the middle-aged white men, and we just cannot have that happen again. That happened in Web 2, it cannot happen in Web 3.
And just touching on that, I think, yeah, and I love all of that, and it's so true. And what I've learned from Web 2 is that burnout is real.
Yeah.
You know, mental health is real. Yeah. You know, kindness is so important. Is yeah. respect, you know, mm-hmm. bringing in all these values that you know, women need to be nurtured. And mm-hmm. and I think that Web 3 is really shining a light on that. In all of the groups I'm in, everyone's always checking in, how's your mental health, you know, mm-hmm. GM, what's happening, like, you know, mm-hmm. and physical health and all and family health and care, like the caring economy. Mm-hmm. Like I'm really interested mm-hmm. how mm-hmm. tokenomics can solve out, you know, universal childcare.
Yes.
You start talking about this with women, like this is what we can do.
Yeah, yeah.
And have this care economy. If we're caring for aging parents, if we're caring for our children or ourselves or, you know, our communities, like it's about saying, if everyone says, you know, let's put a economic value on caring,
mm-hmm.
the world would just turn upside down overnight. Mm-hmm. And this is what can happen in these worlds we're creating. As long as we have the attention and the roadmap and the utility, it becomes like mm-hmm. this place where we can change our values.
Yeah.
Yes. You know?
And I love that UK economist, I think is it Kate Raworth, who's the donut economy, you know, like bringing living within our means, you know, mm-hmm. like creating a better future for the planet. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. if you think about Web3 as being able to do that
mm-hmm.
and to challenge the status quo, and what we're seeing women in Australia are getting paid, you know, something like 20% less than men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's disgusting. Like I heard this morning on the radio, they're saying, oh, there's more, you know, women involved in the workforce, but that's part-time and very poorly paid.
Oh, we see it all the time.
We've got
a recruitment business, and we genuinely can speak to some businesses, and we speak to multiple people in the same teams, and we know that some of the men that are doing the exact same jobs are earning 20, 30K more than the female. Mm-hmm. It's out there for all to see. I think
the key message is we have to work together. And I love the concept of co-creating that we're all going to make it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even if that is
wag me.
Yeah. We're going to make it. And it's about thinking about the whole instead of the self. Like a lot of the mistakes that were made in Web 2 was around greed and franking credits and environmental, destruction in a catastrophic way. So we have to rethink our world. And
100%.
And so everything that we see in the physical world, we can see in the metaphysical metaverse, you know. And so I think the more we anchor it in IRL experiences, the more we anchor it in this kind of stuff, the face-to-face and the tangible, I think we'll get more women in. And really flipping the lens, you know, I think there's that's why I think NFTs are much more kind of robust and interesting. Like pure crypto can, you know, you think crypto bro, you think some guy eating donuts and Doritos and drinking Coke, just like, and then, you know, and I have been in these horrific Discord environments where people just assume you're a bro and just start, you know, broing you down.
Yeah.
The bro.
It's just
bro
all about flipping, making money. You know,
it's just ugly and, you know, boob gags and, you know, it's just, I mean, I'm talking probably, you know, they're 22-year-old blokes in the basement.
Yeah.
And so it's not, you're not going to take like a, you know, that kind of view. So that's why we've got to get in there. Mm-hmm. And it's not scary. It's fun. It's like if we can think about at a macro level what we can do and the feels of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, bringing that into it. And leaders like yourselves, like it's so wonderful what you're doing, you know, like you're really paving the way, you're shining the torch, education is key. And I think also what I learned with my group that I dragged, you know, like making education accessible to women means they're very, you know, women are very busy, they're multitasking. Mm-hmm. How can I do this in a really full life? Like, so is it, you know, sound bites and smaller grabs that lead you to, you know, longer reads, which leads you to, you know, ultimately coding your own smart contracts. Like, you know, and it's not that big of a gap.
Yeah,
and absolutely. And I'd love to think about how we get younger women in too. You know, like I think it's the kind of the whole electric vehicle thing. You know, everyone wants one, but they're too expensive. It's hard to get into that market. But like once enough people get into it, like it, you know, the price comes down. It gets demystified, and everyone's got one. So it's it's kind of like, I think the more creators we get in, female creators we get in, like the World of Women and BFFs and the Surge and Alpha Chicks and Women with Weapons and Sad Girls, like all of a sudden, you know, representation matters.
Absolutely.
I mean, and I've found it so inspiring. I'm following every single one of those projects. Surge Women, new one for today. But it's inspiring, it's uplifting, and women do bring so much value to the table and so many different wonderful attributes. And I'm really excited to see where it all goes.
And it does need to be pushed, like, you know. Like,
it does. It's not just going to happen.
Maybe you'll find a gentler way than just
dragging them in.
But if it has to happen, it has to happen. We've got to kick a few doors in.
Correct. And I think you're right. I think getting out there, you know, getting the brand name out there, doing the in real life events, which we're going to be doing in a few weeks' time. And, you know, these are important because you're going to get women in a room. You're going to be, you know, hopefully speaking to people like yourself, you know, who's going to be basically saying, I think what women get fired up about is when you talk about, like, you know, the younger generation, you know, the gender gaps, you know, why it's a boys club in Web 2 and can't be that in Web 3. Women will get passionate about that, and then they'll get behind those women-led projects. They'll make noise. I do honestly believe that when women come together, we can be so freaking powerful.
Look what's happening in the US right now. It's petrifying. And that's not, if, you know, if men could have babies, that wouldn't be happening. There'd be drive-through abortions at McDonald's.
Correct. Oh, you bet.
And there's echoing of that here. So now more than ever, we have to unite, and we have to really.
Why is this? Like, do you think there is this? Like, do you think because we're rising that there are some, that there are people out there that just sort of want us to keep playing small? Like, it's just fascinating to me how we're starting to kind of make moves, yet there's other things that are trying to keep us
absolutely.
Down.
Absolutely. We are brainwashed by this toxic patriarchy.
Yeah.
And I, even myself all the time, I check myself, I check my bias, and it's real. Yeah. It's there. Yeah. And I'm a raging feminist.
Raging
feminist. And, I'm getting fired up here.
And it's really annoying. Like, you think the way that we were trained at university and then at, you know, in corporations, driving for success, you know, all these kind of masculine traits have been. And also, when you take someone with ultimate privilege, and most of my male friends fall into this category, including my family, when you have someone with all the privilege in the world and you take a tiny, tiny bit away and you're asking them to cede some ground, they feel terribly done by. Mm-hmm. The world's against me. This is terrible. The world's holding it. But literally all we're saying is, you know, can you move a little bit to the left to make a little bit of room, because you actually have all the privilege.
Yeah.
And they don't like it. Mm-hmm. And look at Tim Wilson, Josh Frydenberg. Look at what's happening with Scott Morrison. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been volunteering for the Zoe Daniels campaign, The Independent, and it's extraordinary how men can respond, not all men, but men with power. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Like, it is hard. I've found it myself because I've been doing a lot of, I've been testing myself as a white privileged woman and working with, you know, Indigenous artists and poets. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to step back and give someone else the mic. If you've got the mic, you know, like, you've got, it's great. You've got everything going on. Then, hang on. Probably the most interesting and more powerful voice to listen to in the world today is the black woman's voice.
Yeah.
And when you do step back, which takes courage, and you give the mic, it's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Well, what I can learn from that, you know. Yeah. But then that makes me think, well, then it's even harder as a man because you've got more privilege.
Right.
How do we bring Indigenous knowledge into even the creation of the community? Like, I'm fascinated by the kinship models and bringing Indigenous learning into architecture, and we're building worlds in the metaverse, so we need to know how to architect it in a, you know, in a way that brings Indigenous wisdom.
Absolutely. Like,
it's, and because that's the voice we never hear, and that's the key probably to our existence. Our very like literally the matriarchal kinship system of Indigenous Australia, they hold all the secrets to the environment, to the woes.
Yeah.
And we've shut them out and blocked them out, and we're still taking their children away, putting them in prison when they're 10. Mm-hmm. All of this, and you know, these are issues we need to solve in the metaverse.
Absolutely.
And actually, one of the women I'm working with, Melanie Munungo, who's one of the best hip hop slam poetry champions of Australia, she adores the metaverse.
Yeah.
She sees this instantly as a way to create intergenerational wealth for her children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and she sees it as a way to inspire her entire community. She's from Northeast Arnhem Land.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And they're artists, you know, and poets, and their ideas, and imagine if we could use this technology to elevate.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Change the world.
And we will.
And I genuinely think that the metaverse in itself and Web3 can be a really scary place, and it can be just, women are just like holding back from getting involved in it. However, the positive social impact that women will have by having a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get more women into the space. Look,
absolutely. And you know what? When I first entered the metaverse, I got spat out. I went in there fast. I'm like, oh, I said to my sister, oh, I've just been spat out of the metaverse. Oh, and she's like, what? And then I'm like, no, you got to get back in there. And even myself, who understands, like, who have been part of this, you know, technology world, travel the world, I've raised millions of dollars, I've launched satellites, I've had petabytes of data, you know, and still it's confronting. And even now, like working with some of the top investors in the space, like we all say, even though we're steeped and deeply in the space, we're still confused and inspired, but also it's because it's all happening at the same time. We're jumping off the cliff, and it's all forming still. With super alpha, this is a great time to come in. You're not too late, and that's the best message.
Mm-hmm.
If I was, you know, to say one thing, I'd say get in there and just have a go, you know. Absolutely. Like just get amongst it and open your mind slightly, like just open the door a little bit, and just even if it's just one element you want to learn about, if you want to think about it from a human rights perspective or from, you know, saving the arts industry in Australia or and for me, it's about that arts industry, but it's also about solving out this care economy, because it's so close to my heart, and that's what's missing in the world. You know,
Absolutely.
So all this caring that's happening, that's not seen and not economically rewarded.
Yeah.
And if we could do that, you know, like imagine if you could, if through just simply by caring, you're earning intergenerational wealth.
Correct.
Imagine that.
Well, let's imagine that and let's make it happen. Liza, it's been an absolute pleasure. I could honestly sit here and talk to you all day, like just get fired up and passionate about all these topics, but conscious of everyone's time. But thank you so much for doing this today. It's been absolutely wonderful talking to you. And
my inner feminist is roaring right now.
And I'll say to your women, good women of the metaverse, come and have a chat, have a cuppa, come to the sisterhood club. And I'll be here and, you know, I'd love to help.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Yeah, come join our Discord because we'll get Liza in chatting all things metaverse and things. So thank you so much. And I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. Take care. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. And if you did, please give a little share on your social. And if you have time, please leave a review. And I hope to see you next time. Take care.